My life is falling apart. Everything is spinning around me, and I'm left confused and wrecked. What is this insatiable need for you? Without time in your presence, my world is deconstructed, and I begin to fail in my spirit. Without you, I fall back to Dojo J, this J controlled by pride, exploitation, lust, and power. But it is at my most powerful that I find myself most weak. I just got word of some division that took place in one of our small groups, specifically coming against me personally and some basic programming decisions. It just makes me angry. I want to hurt someone, and to tell you the truth, I just might. I get so hurt by them. These people who I love and who I just want to find Jesus. They don't want to follow, and I feel like I have to drag them kicking and screaming the whole way. What? That's how you feel about me? Well, it hurts because I want to love them, but I don't understand love. And when I try and love someone and I don't understand love, I end up being misread and feel misunderstood. I want to go there, pinpoint each person's words, point out how they hurt the overall vision of your kingdom in Lebanon. Man, mad and sad. Sometimes I feel like giving up. I feel like saying, fine. Have it your way. It hurts. It hurts so much taking shots like this, here in the busyness of this Borders Cafe. If you could show up and care for me, I'd really appreciate it. Jay, my son, you and I have been through so much worse than this. Think back to the hell of your deepest questions. Think back to the times in the past when you felt this same way. There's no need for you to defend or declare. Just be who I've made you to be. Remember, you don't need to slay this giant. I will slay this giant through you. Stop trying to be a giant killer. Be a little boy with a sling. Be who I made you to be. Choose 5 smooth stones. Go kill your giant. But don't take your sword. Don't put on your armor. Don't put on someone else's armor. Go and slay your giant. But you got to be my son. On top of a huge mountain, I'm supposed to be at Boxcar Rocks but got lost and ended up here in this place instead. I am in the middle of nowhere. I'm up here to figure out why I feel like such a failure. Today, I downloaded a really hard honesty to Sherry. It was killer. She knew that this thing had been there. She knew about it all, but I don't think she knew the fullness of it. When I told her the fullness of it, I couldn't help but feel embarrassed and humiliated. I can understand why she needs to know some things, but why you would tell me to tell her everything, that's hard. People think I'm powerful. I'm not powerful. I'm an idiot. When things get really hard like they are now, I often wonder why God trusts me with a church at all. You know, I don't feel like this thing is a matter of hypocrisy. I've never, nor will I ever, you know, try and teach about this area that I struggle with. But I do speak about vulnerability, though. This just doesn't feel like vulnerability. It feels humiliating and embarrassing. You know, maybe vulnerability means to allow others to humiliate and embarrass you if they want to. It means trusting community, that the people that you are vulnerable with won't humiliate and embarrass you. Come to think of it, that's sort of how you operate with me. Come to think of it, that's sort of how Sherry operates with me. At the mountain again. It's 20 degrees outside, so I'm at Dunkin' Donuts. It's too cold for an outside mountain time. My fingers can't take it. Getting to the mountain more frequently produces a strange opportunity. Primarily, it's that I'm not here in crisis for the first time. I'm here seeking. Not bringing anything, really. Just here to talk to God. I do have some major things in my life right now, like the church plant and Matt coming on staff and the school discipleship and But those things, they don't feel as weighty as they did. I honestly think that today, I'm just here to hear and to hang. So what do you want to speak to me about, Father? What do I bring to you today? One thing Keith said in our last meeting was that it seems to him that I may be seeking to overcome an old paradigm, fundamentalism, with an old paradigm, fear and control. Keith speaks often of living in new dimensions. It's a principle that I've jived with for a while from Romans 6. You don't try and defeat sin. Only Jesus can defeat sin. Instead, try to yield to another master, a different dimension. God, I know this new dimension has to do with the mountain and worship and joy. Looking back at the old paradigm, there were things missing. But most of all, what was missing was love. And so to live in a new dimension toward the old paradigm means that there must be a reorientation of my spirit to the direction and the life of the new dimension. I'm dead positive that I can't make this shift happen. I've been trying to make this shift happen. There's no evidence that I'm even being close to successful at it. I desperately need you to move me into a new dimension of love. Teach me what it means to love who I was, who they were, and still are. Is God an ends or a means? Is God an end or a means? Is it enough to have him and only him, or is he a means to my end? Am I looking for God to do me some good, or am I willing to connect with him and only him? So many attacks on so many levels, but all pushing toward one thing, sonship. I feel like I'm encountering it again on Sherry's spiral. Having dealt with sonship and the issues that come against it, it seems through discernment that every major attack in my life is generally on a sonship level. For that matter, when I think about my friends and people at Cornerstone, it seems like every attack against sonship has everything to do with sonship. That every attack from any level always comes back to who I am in Jesus. My son, my word has never been about you. How often have I seen you work so hard to deliver when all I wanted was just to give you rest? Why do you strive for glory that's not yours? Let me use you. I delight to give good gifts to you, and this whole past few weeks has been about my goodness to you in spite of you. You are most anointed when you are most in me. I'm Cornerstone's future. You're my vessel. So you must be in me, and I will be in you. And I'll build Cornerstone, and the gates of hell will not come against her, but it will not be because of you. Draw me in, Father. Speak to me again the beauty of our relationship. Let your favor rest upon this son, and may I shine to be filled with words from you and sight through you. Take me on your lap so I can see what you see from your perspective. Renew my mind so I can think what you think. Open my heart to yours so I may feel what you feel. Consume my spirit with your fire so that I'm filled with and walking in your spirit. Abba, I beg you, make these days full only of glory to you, for you alone are worthy of all honor, glory, and praise. Here I am again, losing it. Here I am again, weeks and weeks of focus on me. Here I am again, wondering why in the world I do this to begin with. I've been avoiding you. I'm sorry I've been avoiding you. I know it hurts me. I know it hurts you. I'm honestly telling you that I'm not sure why I've been doing it or what has truly been happening in me. I know that I've been running on fumes. Thank you for sustaining me. Thanks for the words and hope that you've put in this point. Sherry's biopsy was being performed, and I was telling the church that God is good no matter what. That was a statement from my reserves. I just couldn't feel it. I don't know why. It's not like we haven't suffered before with the kids' CF and everything we experienced around it. It hasn't touched us hard in a long time. Questions and suffering, worry. Since we moved to PA, maybe. No, obviously. Not being completely leaning and depending on him and one another has been a lost part of relationship because we haven't been thrust in the fire as hard of late. On some levels, I guess I'm dealing with a spirit of entitlement that says I should be able to live without sacrifice. On the other hand, I'm positive that what this is about is faith. Suffering breeds faith, and that's the perspective that I've been missing. Lack of faith breeds sin, and that's an effect that I've been feeling. And I think that why I've been so caught off guard by Sherry's lymph node and my knee surgery and all the issues with LVPN and 222 and the church plant and Cornerstone and the school discipleship and Sunday mornings and small groups, Somehow I bought a deception that faith was something that I had mastered. Faith was just a part of who I was or am. Seriously, I must be one of the most arrogant people on this planet. Here I've been approaching faith as though it's a lesson to be learned instead of a lifestyle to be lived. All three of these big ones are like that: faith, hope, and love. All three of these are lifestyles, mindsets, postures, spirits that are ever-changing, growing, and deepening. What's more is that the kiln in which all three are fired is that of suffering and trial. Heartache, hardship, uphill climbs are the things that foster faith. And whether or not great things happen for the kingdom has everything to do with how much a son, me, believes that his father is actually doing this work in him. Is this it? I really want to receive fully what you are giving and not miss any of it. There have been three dreams I have had this week that are key. I'm not going to tell you about those. I think all three of these dreams speak to what God is trying to teach me about faith and what happens when I don't live by faith. I thought our experience with CF was my trial of faith, and I had things mastered from a faith standpoint. What I'm learning is that faith is raw, earthy, and present. It's not something to be walked through. It is something to be immersed and drowned in. God, forgive me for missing you and avoiding you. Restore my faith and bring me back to you. Teach me more what a lifestyle of faith means. Give me a spirit of total dependence on you. I once again put the cart before the horse and began looking for blessing from you instead of dwelling in the blessing that is you. I do love you and I want great things for your glory, but I just lack faith. Teach me to believe and to trust. Write my reliance in you. Thank you for your forgiveness and your grace. What I want to talk to you about today is the next major concept in the creation story. Take your Bibles and turn to Genesis 2. Verse 1, so the creation of the heavens and the earth and everything in them was completed. On the seventh day, having finished his task, God rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and declared it holy because it was the day when he rested from his work of creation. This is the account of the creation of the heavens and the earth. Stick your finger in Genesis 2 and turn over to Exodus 20. Exodus 20, verse 8. Remember to observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days a week are set apart for your daily duties and regular work, but the seventh day is a day of rest dedicated to the Lord your God. On that day, no one in your household may do any kind of work. This includes you, your sons and daughters, your male and female servants, your livestock, any foreigners living among you. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and everything in them. Then he rested on the seventh day. That is why the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and set it apart as holy. Now turning your Bibles to Hebrews chapter 4. 4 verse 1. God's promise of entering his place of rest still stands. So we ought to tremble with fear that some of you might fail to get there. For this good news that God has prepared a place of rest has been announced to us just as it was to them. But it did them no good because they didn't believe what God told them. For only we who believe can enter his place of rest. As for those who didn't believe, God said, in my anger I made a vow, they will never enter my place of rest. It is ready because the scriptures mention that seventh day, saying, on the seventh day, God rested from all his work. But in the other passage, God said, they will never enter my place of rest. So God's rest is there for people to enter. But those who formerly heard the good news failed to enter. Why? Because they disobeyed God. So God set another time for entering his place of rest, and that time is today. God announced this through David a long time later in the words already quoted. Today you must listen to his voice. Don't harden your hearts against him. This new place of rest was not the land of Canaan where Joshua led them. If it had been, God would not have spoken later about another day of rest. So there is a special rest still waiting for the people of God. For all who enter into God's rest will find rest from their labors, just as God rested after creating the world. Let us do our best to enter that place of rest. For anyone who disobeys God, as the people of Israel did, will fall. For the word of God is full of living power. It is sharper than the sharpest knife, cutting deep into the innermost thoughts and desires. It exposes us for what we really are. Nothing in all creation can hide from him. Everything is naked and exposed before his eyes. This is the God to whom we must explain all that we have done. What I want to talk to you today about is the concept of rest. Genesis chapter 2. How many of you are tired? How many of you got plenty of sleep last night and you're tired? Okay. How many of you love the Phillies enough to have watched that whole game? You have rewards in heaven, my friends. God's a Phillies fan. Don't argue with me. All right. rest. There is nothing. Listen, this is one of those things. You know how, like, you really want something, and then when you get it, you don't want it anymore just because you have it? Like, we do that most when we're kids, you know, where we really want, like, a thing, a toy, or something like that. And we get it, and then when we want it, or then when we have it, we're like, we're sort of done with it. You know, I mean, how many of us have, you know, clothes hanging in our closet or sitting in a drawer that we've, like, worn once or not at all, you know, just because it's there. I mean, it meant something to have it, apparently, because we have it. But then it's just, like, there. Pointless. So we think that there's this thing going on. We think that there's, like, this need that we have. And then we try and fulfill that need. And then we wonder why the need that we tried to fulfill with the thing is still there. And that's how we are with rest. There is nothing that American Christians say they want more than rest. And there is nothing that American Christians do less than rest. You hear that? There is nothing that American Christians say that they want more than rest. And there is nothing that American Christians do less than rest, even when they get it. Even when they get it. This little exercise of mountain time with Jay was not meant to show you how to have your devotions. And it was not meant at all to show you how it is that I have my devotions, because I don't really care about either one of those things. What I do care about is this, is the fact that we, in the church, live our lives at breakneck paces of thousands of miles per hour, spiritually, emotionally, and physically. And we get really tired and we break at some point, and we just sort of lose it spiritually, emotionally, and physically. We have spiritual, emotional, and physical breakdowns that then cause us to sit back and stop. And then we go to God and we say, God, I just need rest. And so we rest, much like I did the very first time I came up here, where we sort of sit here. All right. Good stuff. Good stuff. Let's go. Now, let's get back to my breakneck pace of life. Because, oh, that was good rest. And then I get back to my breakneck pace of life, and I re-engage it. And 5 minutes after I re-engage it, I'm as tired as I was before I went and had rest. And then we look at ourselves in the mirror, and we go, why are you working so hard? Why are you doing this to yourself? And so we even sometimes declare that just, bam, I'm done with it all. I'm done with it all. You know, I'm pulling out of everything. I'm pulling out of everything. You know, and so, I mean, as Christians and as leaders, and we deal with these kinds of situations all the time, you know, where my life is just too busy. Something's got to go. What's got to go? Well, generally ministry goes first, right? One thing that definitely doesn't go is a ridiculous work schedule, or one thing that doesn't go is you know, obliging ridiculous family expectations. We would never sacrifice those things, you know, or, you know, our time with the television or any of those sorts of things. What we tend to think makes us feel most tired is ministry when it comes down to it, or specifically Jesus time, because that's hard work. Because we go there, right? We go to this in the midst of our insanity that we create for ourselves, and we go to God and we tell God to help us. We tell God, we sit down with him, we go, okay, God, you've asked me for this. I've heard you ask me for this so many times. I'm here. Rescue me. And I feel like sometimes, I mean, if I was God, and I'm not, but if I was, and I think that this might happen, I think God just sits up there and goes, what are you talking? Are you for real? Do you hear what you just said to me? Did you honestly just come to me and say, okay, God, I'm going to satisfy your needs? Whoa. Well, that's different, isn't it? Is that what I said? That is what I said. That is what we say. So that God becomes this genie in a bottle where we feel like we should have the right to run our lives however the heck we want to and just keep popping quarters in the vending machine when we need the spiritual fill-up. Now, I'll be the first to admit to you, as you can tell from my journals, this is the pot calling the kettle black. But at some point, something has to shift. And I think that that's what God started to say to me back in January of 05, was that something has to change or else I was just going to lose it. You know what I mean? And my perspective so often is that I like to get really, really busy and insanely stupid with ministry stuff. This is my, you know, this is my calling. It's my job. It's what I do, and it's where I get. It's where I, like to invest a lot. And I feel like I'm building the kingdom and whatnot. And for you, it might be different. Maybe you love your job and you like to work insane hours there. Maybe you love sports and you like to invest the same amount of hours there. Maybe you love shopping and you like to invest insane amount of hours there. Maybe you love shopping and therefore you have to work insane hours in order to support your shopping habit. Maybe you love fixing up your house more so that you feel better about yourself because you've got a better house then, and so you've got to do that. I mean, essentially, everything that Dennis talks about in stewardship, when we hear Dennis talk about stewardship, this is a rabbit trail, we should ultimately be thinking that what Dennis is leading us into is rest when it comes down to it. Financial freedom is a point of rest. All right, financial bondage is a point of stress and a point of striving. On the Today Show this past week, I was in Indiana this past week at a conference, and I was watching Today Show while I was waiting for my ride. And they were talking about how to deal with the current financial crisis. And so they're talking about how to, particularly in this case, how to talk to your kids about the financial crisis. What if your kids have questions? What do you say to them? And they gave some pretty good advice, actually. So actually, some pretty sound biblical advice when it came down to it. The very next segment was how to throw a birthday party for your pet. Oh, man. Funny stuff. But isn't that what we do? Isn't that what we do? God, help me out of my crisis so that I can dive right back into my insanity. So that I can come back to you with my crisis. So that I can go back to the addiction of my insanity. And we live our lives saying, I'm so tired. I'm so busy. I'm so this. I'm so that. And God's up there going, you just miss it. You are just missing it. So let's talk about rest. Let me read this again, verse 1. So the creation of the heavens and the earth, and everything in them was completed. On the seventh day, having finished his task, God rested from all his work. God blessed the seventh day and declared it holy, because it was the day when he rested from his work of creation. This is the account of the heavens and the earth. Okay, so now, I'm going to give you a pop quiz. You can simply answer vocally. You don't need to get out your half sheet of paper. We will not be exchanging these with the persons next to us. Just go ahead and call out the answer, all right? True or false? God is all-powerful. Good? True or false? God does not get tired. True. Good. True or false? True or false? The creation of the world wore God out. False. Essay question. So why did God rest? Oh, speaking in tongues. All right. So why did God rest? I mean, get this. Here is right up front. You ready? Dwayne, next slide, please. Next slide. Rest is not sleep. We equate rest with insane amounts of tiredness from overactivity. That is not rest. That's not rest. I don't know what it is, but it's not rest. What is it? It's sleep. Well spoken. Who was that? Well done, Jesse. Well done, despite the fact you're wearing a Steelers jersey. Rest is not sleep. I'll give it to you. We all need to rest. You do need rest. You do not need sleep. That is not rest. Not biblically. God does not rest because he is tired from making the world. Next slide, Dwayne. Rest is not stoppage of conflict. That's what we think. That's what we think, right? We think that, okay, my life is insane. These people around me are insaner. And therefore, if I get away from them, I can have rest. Right? I mean, don't try and tell me you've never had that thought process, because you have. It is absolutely the case that we think that if I can just get away from this person, then I can have some rest. The only problem is that conflict is not based in the presence of people. Conflict is based in the presence of people. Conflict is not based in the presence of people, but it is very much based in the presence of people. Here you go. You ready? Listen, conflict is a product of sin, right? Conflict is a product of sin. This world was made in perfect shalom. Shalom is the highest thought that is in the Judaic concept, right? I mean, the shalom, the peace of God. That's what the Garden of Eden was. It was perfect shalom. It was perfect peace. Lack of conflict is certainly peace, right? And so, what we think is if I can get away from the conflicted situation, then I will have shalom. And that's not at all the case. Because the reason we don't have shalom is because we live in a world that is broken and fallen. And the problem with conflict is not people. It is sin in the world. At the same time, conflict is definitely about people because people are sinners. But we can no sooner get away from people and therefore no sooner get away from conflict than we can jump over the moon. But that's what we think. And so we end up fracturing relationships everywhere. Or worse yet, we end up not going into them at all. And there are marriages and friendships and small groups in this room who are dying because you will not go anywhere. And your home might be shalomish when it's actually sin-filled. And we wonder why our wives are discontent. And we wonder why our husbands are angry. And we wonder why our children are distant. And we wonder why our friendships, we have them, but we still feel alone. It's because we think we need some strange form of rest that exists in some strange form of stoppage of conflict that is not rest at all. Next slide, Dwayne, please. Lack of busyness. Rest is not lack of busyness. Rest is most definitely not lack of busyness. We think that we're busy today. We're not busy. We're not busy. People in India that get up in the morning and wonder how they're going to feed their kids at dinner that night, that's busy. That's busy. I'll give them that. We are not busy. We are not busy. There is not one single American in this country who is busy. We are busy because we choose to be busy, but we are not defined by busy. When we get down to the nuts and bolts of what am I going to eat, can I drink clean water, and where am I going to sleep tonight, now we can call those things busy. I think those people are busy because that's real. Everything else is a sham. Everything else is a farce that we love to listen, worship, idolize. We love our busyness. Americans love our busyness. We love it. Christians love our busyness because it makes us feel significant and good. But then when we reach that point of absolute burnout where we're just so tired and everything is like it's just too much stress, we go, okay, well, my busyness is the problem, so I'll get rid of everything that I'm busy with. So I'm going to bail on small group for a while. I'm going to back out of ministry over here because Jesus usually goes first. I'm going to pull back from my relationships, you know, quality time and essential time with my wife and or kids. That generally comes second. Right? One thing we don't do is call and disconnect the cable. Right? Another thing that we don't do is reorganize our work schedules and take dominion over our workplace. We don't go those places because that's a little bit too close to home. That's a little bit too close to busyness. Rest is not lack of busyness. People in India that love Jesus and are truly busy, they'll tell you they rest. Next slide. Rest is not self-time. Rest is not self-time. Rest is not about you getting alone with you for some peace and quiet. Next slide. Rest is not discipline. Rest is not discipline. You may have a discipline of rest, but rest is not discipline. As Christians, we love to read stuff that disciplines and structures our lives for us. Stuff by Richard Foster, which is all great stuff, you know, or George MacDonald or Gordon MacDonald, C.S. Lewis. A lot of these guys wrote about disciplines that breathe life and stuff into our lives. But rest is not discipline. You may have a discipline of rest, but rest is not discipline. Just because you have time to get away each morning in something that we call devotions or personal prayer doesn't mean that we're resting. All right? So that is what rest is not. That's what rest is not. Let's go to what rest is. What is rest? Next slide. Actually, you know what? Don't go to the next slide yet. Take that off the slide. There you go. So the creation of the heavens and the earth and everything in them was created. On the seventh day, having finished his task, God rested from all his work. God blessed the seventh day and declared it holy. Because it was the day when he rested from his work of creation. Who is resting? Who is resting? God. Right. God is resting here. Adam and Eve have been created, or Adam's been created at least at this point. Adam has been created. Is Adam resting? I don't know either. Okay. It's a good question. God is resting, though. Here's the focus, right? Next slide. Rest is definitely solitude. But solitude, when it comes to a Christian resting, is actually the presence of one. Next slide. Rest is also silence, but silence, when it comes to a Christian resting, is actually the voice of one. We tend to think that rest has something to do with just getting away from everything, including Jesus, right? Including God. Or when we do go there, we make sure that we try and seek God in ways that are familiar and quote-unquote real to us from our experience, which is why Christians so idolize the concepts of devotions. When in all actuality, I can have my devotions every day and never ever rest in God. Because what the reason why I rest is key to everything. If I'm getting alone with God to just be alone, that's not rest. If I'm getting away from the noise of the world in order to be silent with God, but I'm not with God, that's not silence. If I get alone and silent with God and tell him how to be alone and silent with me, that's not rest. Why does God rest here on the seventh day? We'll get there. Next slide. Rest is, listen, the deepest point of fulfillment. Solitude is the presence of just one. Silence is the voice of just one. And it is at that place that we receive deepest fulfillment. Next slide. It is focus that goes beyond focus. It is focus that loses the concept of focus. It is focus, that's why rest isn't discipline. That's where rest then crosses over into shalom or peace in our lives. When we can honestly, truly be disconnected from the craziness of our world, which I'll give you, is crazy. I'm not saying that our worlds aren't crazy. I'm not saying that we don't live as people who are very active. We are. All I'm saying is that there is no reason why we got to be running around like chickens with our heads cut off at the same time that we're declaring how tired we are, because God does not design his people to live like that. He designs us to be people that live as people who are full of rest. But rest is not lack of something. Listen. Rest is not lack of something. And that's what we generally think of rest as. Get me away from this other stuff so that I can rest. That's not what God does on the seventh day. God engages something here. He engages his own glory. He engages his own beauty. He engages his own deepest fulfillment. Rest is meant to be the place of deepest fulfillment. Why does God rest on the seventh day? It is certainly for more than just setting a model for us. God is doing something here that is the key to everything. He works 6 days and he sits back, not because he's tired, not because he's got nothing better to do with his time, not just to give us a discipline to follow. He sits back because it is at that point that he is enjoying his own beauty, that he is living in the deepest place of fulfillment, which is the presence of himself. and the wonder of His work. God creates the heavens and the earth, everything in them. And on the seventh day, having finished this task, God rested from all His work, and He blessed the seventh day, and He declared it holy. The very first thing ever to be sanctified is the seventh day of creation, because it was the day when He rested from His work of creation. Next slide. Rest is the point. I wish I had time. I wish I had time to take us through the Old Testament, the whole thing. Because in the Old Testament, what you will see is that the whole point of the redemptive story of the nation of Israel is the point of rest. And not even so that you and I can rest, but so that the land can rest. The nation of Israel is set up, and God tells them to go into the land of Canaan and destroy everything that's idolatrous in there. Get rid of it all. Purify the land so that the land can rest. The book of Joshua, the theme of Joshua, in my opinion, is the land is able to rest. ... But it doesn't. Everything is set right there. Shalom is the point. But shalom can only be found in the person of God. The point of rest is not disconnect from everything. The point of rest is engagement with the one and the only one who can actually give us what our hearts most seek, which is somewhere to go from the insanity that is our world. And I'm not talking about busyness now. Now I'm talking about pain, loneliness, heartache, worry, financial issues, marriage, child rearing, education, relationship conflict, lack of fulfillment. The point of rest is that when we rest, when we live as people who inhabit rest, God takes us above and into a new dimension of focus on Him and just Him. It is fulfillment in God for the sake of God and no other reason. On day seven, God rests. He sits down, He sits back, and He admires. And He is fulfilled. And what is He fulfilled with? He is fulfilled with Himself and with His own work. And what is it that He calls you and I to be fulfilled with? Himself and with His own work. Take your text and turn to Psalm 27, verse 4. One thing I ask of the Lord, one thing do I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, delighting in the Lord's perfections, meditating in His temple. One thing I ask of God, that I may behold the beauty of the Lord, that I might inquire as to what it is that God is up to. One thing I ask, one thing I seek, to behold the Lord's beauty, to be in His temple, to rest there with Him. One thing I ask, one thing I seek, to gaze on the Lord's perfections, to marvel at His beauty, to live in His house, to inquire of His mind. This is rest. Rest is not a ceasing of activity. Rest is oftentimes lived out in our lives as a ceasing of activity. But you and I can rest in God through all things. And I believe that it is as we learn to rest, as we learn to, which actually, if you define rest here by Psalm 27:4. I mean, it requires verbs on our part. Seek, ask, gaze, inquire. Those are activities. So rest is not cessation of activity. Rather, rest is a higher pursuit of something. Rest is a more tenacious going after, because it is God who fulfills. It is God who brings rest. It is as we gaze on the Lord's beauty and live in His temple and inquire of His mind that we can truly be fulfilled. That we can be filled up. Because it is at that point that we are doing the same thing that God did on day 7 of creation. God was in His temple, in His holy place, gazing at His beauty, inquiring of His own mind. This is rest. So how do we rest? Well, here's a few things. This is just from pure, experience that I'm still experiencing and not very good at, as you can tell from my journals. Number one, find a metaphor. For me, the metaphor is going to the mountain. For you, the metaphor might be going into the temple. You know, for you, the metaphor might be going deeper into deep. You know, I'm thinking of like biblical phrases here. You know, ways that we can, that we need to be with God, where we are in solitude, which is presence of one, and silence, which is a voice of one. Find a metaphor to live your life by. That when you seek after God, it is this. And it's something that engages your story. Drop having devotions. Okay? That's not in here. Find something in here. Right? Find something in here. Go on a walk. You know what I mean? Journey. That's in here. Going up a mountain. That's in here. Being taken over by waterfalls. That's in here. You know what I mean? Find something in here that is good, that is a metaphor for the deep pursuit of God in your life. Going to the mountain works for me. You know, it's good. When you go to the mountain, right? When you go to the mountain, or when you do whatever it is that you do, expect to be disappointed. Expect to be disappointed. Not because God's not there. Not because God's not there. He is. The only problem is that you're not. You're not. I mean, you'll be there, and your heart will be really desirous. But I don't think that any of us in this room have any clue how noisy our life actually is. Until we start to get silence and solitude in our lives. We don't really realize just how loud the sound is. How loud the sounds of our worries and our fears and our jobs and our ministries and all these different things, how loud these things are. And so, like you saw me do the first time, you know, I just sort of came up here and then left. And that was pretty much my first mountain experience. I was there for like 7 or 8 minutes because... Well, I mean, I was doing it, and God wasn't saying anything, I thought. And so I was sort of like, all right, this was good. I feel good. I'm up here on this hill, and now I'm going to go down. So then I went back again. I went back again. This is all at the urging of a friend who saw this lack in my life. So the second time, that's when I decided, okay, maybe I should pursue God a little bit on this. And so I took my Bible and opened it and read it, and it was good. And I pulled out my iPod, I put it on shuffle, and a Metallica song came on out of this like 6,700 songs that I have on there. And I was sort of like, well, that's probably not the voice of the Lord. I think it was Master of Puppets, which is definitely not the voice of the Lord. That's the last thing he is. Yeah, I know. So I was just sort of like, all right, that's good. Got back down off the mountain. Went back. Was going like every 3 months at this point. You know, I mean, I was busy. You know, I was really busy. But I get this whole time. I mean, I'm a pastor, one thing. So it's more important maybe for me to have devotions than, you know, to go through that discipline. Because not that I'm more important than you, but just that in my mind, in my heart for who I am, having devotions is key. You know, I mean, so I'm still having devotion at this point, but my buddy Tim is telling me this whole time, Jay, having devotions is doing nothing for you. You need to go to the mountain. Go to the mountain. Right? All the time he's saying this, go to the mountain. I'm like, fine, screw you. I'll go to the mountain. I'll go to the mountain. How was the mountain? It sucked. I was there for like 8 minutes and God didn't say anything. Thanks a lot. And I was cold, you know. And then, you know, 3 months, he's saying it again. You got to go to the mountain. You got to go to the mountain. And then Sherry starts picking up on this phrase because, like, he told her about it or something. And she starts saying it. And so I go back and do this thing. And so, you know, yeah, sure, I guess God spoke. And then, right, well, then I started going back. And every time that I went back with a deeper focus. I went back with a deeper focus of starting to understand that solitude and silence is actually presence of one and voice of one, not just escape from the stupidity of my life. And when I started to seek just the one presence and the one voice, instead of just trying to disconnect myself from everything, that's when God started to speak. But I think that you could see a progression that from what I can tell and people that I talk to and friends that I have and whatnot, as we engage life together, is that this is pretty typical. That if you're not going to the mountain very often, you know what I mean? If it's not something in your life that you're used to getting there and going there, when you go there, it tends to be A, out of crisis. You know, I mean, you probably picked up on that. I would wait till I felt like crap, and then I would go to the mountain. You know, or I would wait until a crisis hit, and then I'd go to the mountain. Or until Cornerstone ticked me off, and then I would go to the mountain. Or, you know, until something was going wrong at home, and then I'd go to the mountain. But then there was that one day when the light bulb went off, when I realized that I had gone to the mountain, and nothing was really going wrong. And I wasn't even really worried about that much that day. And God spoke so clearly to me about me being his son. And I think it was like one of the first times that God ever dropped shalom in my spirit. And it was just sort of, I can't tell you what it was because I think you have to live it. You have to experience it. The shalom of God. So find a metaphor and be diligent. Number three is you must embody the proper definitions of solitude and silence. Solitude and silence is not being alone. It's not quiet. Solitude is presence of one. Silence is voice of one. And it's in those spaces. And as we go there and pursue God, as we go there, that we are asking and seeking this one thing of the Lord. Not to fix me. Right? God, get me out of this jam. Not these people don't want to follow right now. You know, he never answered any of those questions. Not once. He almost ignored me. At the same time, he deposited into me, you're my son. You're going to be fine. Calm down. I love you. Dad's here. It's okay. And going to God in these ways consistently is living day seven of creation. Day seven is the day of fulfillment. To gaze on the beauty of the Lord. To dwell in his temple. To inquire of his mind. Rest is deeply active. But it is also deeply focused and deeply fulfilling.